I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH Boston. 12 years ago this month, American and coalition forces went to war in Afghanistan. And as we mentioned earlier in the program, U.S. forces are still fighting and dying there. The seemingly never-ending battle against the Taliban grinds on. For more than a decade, the Taliban have continued to terrorize Afghans and to undermine the shaky government of President Hamid Karzai. Next April, Karzai is slated to step down, but the candidates likely to succeed him and the electoral process that would put them in place are deeply flawed. So says the Carnegie Endowment's Sarah Chase.
There's a very checkered cast of characters, but I think even more important than the individual names on the list is the sort of smoke and mirrors of the whole exercise. It's not as though there are a number of candidates and then people are going to vote for them and the top two will run off against each other. Sometimes it's sort of like false competition. So the way a single multinational might produce a number of different brands of a certain product, toothpaste, and people feel like there's actually a competition among these different brands, but they all belong to the same guy. So what's happened already is that President Karzai has stuffed, as it were, the so-called Independent Elections Commission. He's appointed an interior minister who controls a significant amount of the pre-electoral process because he controls not just the police in Afghanistan, but also the governors.
Karzai's not running. So are there some candidates who it seems like are going to be the leaders in this election?
I still think that President Karzai will be running the fraud. The question is going to be on behalf of whom. And there are several candidates that are seen by many Afghans to be aligned with President Karzai. And that goes back to what I was saying earlier about false competition. You have his older brother, Kayyum Karzai, in the race. You have Zalmay Rasool that President Karzai had suggested earlier on that he's in favor of him. And probably one or two others. And what I believe is going to happen is that at an opportune moment, all but one of these pro-Karzai candidates is going to pull out and sort of throw his block of votes to the last remaining one.
So there's some evidence on the fraud in the 2009 election. How do we know the fix is in right now for this election, as you allege?
I don't know that, but there's no indication that steps have been made to prevent the same thing from happening, and also President Karzai's determined push to put people favorable to him personally on the Independent Election Commission and to prevent there being a similar international, professional international involvement on these two bodies, and to also reduce the powers of the Electoral Complaints Commission indicate that he's planning to do this.
I mean, the election is also, we got to remember, against the backdrop of U.S. presence in Afghanistan that is quickly winding down. And just this week, we've heard President Karzai lashing out at the U.S., saying Afghanistan isn't really willing to compromise when it comes to a continued U.S. presence and that NATO is to blame for the country's current problems. Here's what Karzai had to say to the BBC this week.
On security front, the entire NATO exercise was one that caused Afghanistan a lot of suffering and a lot of loss of life, and no gains because the country is not secure. I'm not happy to say that, well, there is partial security. That's not what we are seeking. What we wanted was absolute security and a clear-cut war against terrorism.
So, Sarah Chase, Afghanistan's president is saying NATO hasn't done anything of value in the last 10 years. What's he really after here in making that sort of statement? Is he saving face for a domestic Afghan audience?
I think he is saving face. And obviously, there have been a number of errors and significantly misguided policy over the course of the last 11, 12 years. That being said, I'm not sure if his objective is to not have a continuing presence and therefore not have the kind of financial resources flowing into Afghanistan that he seems very interested in continuing to receive, he's going about it the right way. I mean, in a funny way, I think that in his effort to curry favor with some aspects of the Afghan electorate, he's also really overplaying his hand with respect to the United States. I still don't think that much of the Afghan leadership understands just how tired the U.S. public and government is with this exercise and how, with what little regret, the United States will walk out the door and not look back.
I mean, you've been following Afghanistan as closely as any Westerner for the last 10 years, Sarah. Are you exhausted at this point?
I'm exhausted with the United States government, which has just refused over the course of more than a decade to change the fundamental approach to this country. And that means the approach to the kleptocratic governance of the Karzai administration, which the United States has been enabling and which the Afghan population can't stand and against which it's had no recourse on the one hand. And on the other hand, its approach to Pakistan, which has been deliberately fomenting an insurgency in Afghanistan. And until one or the other of those problems is addressed by the United States government, there's no hope for a more positive outcome in Afghanistan. And I frankly know, having been inside some of these debates, that these decisions are not going to be relitigated.
Sarah Chase is a senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She'll soon have a new book out on how kleptocratic governance fuels religious extremism. It's called No Appeal on Earth. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you, Marco.